All right, so here we are live on BBS Radio. My name is Gijs Minderhout. I am located in Magalia, California. Today it is September the 19th, 2016. This is the Monday evening gathering with Win Free and his co-host Terry Brown, located in Sedona. Tonight we will have, as usual, a random topic, and I do not even know yet if it has been announced yet. Apparently not. Oh yeah, there it is. So the topic is Terry Friedman, the reincarnation of Matthew, with a question mark. So let's see what we will get to hear tonight. I welcome you all, and thank you for being here, participating with this. It is for me a pleasure to do so. I'm an electrician during the daytime, and I do this on the side for volunteering with welcoming you guys, actually those who call in on the conference call. It is, as usual, a simulcast with a conference call. And I've done it for years now. I'm glad to do this, and I hope this thing with Win Free will take on some serious volume, as to where many people will join in, and that this will be a humongous snowball getting bigger and bigger, because the beautiful thing is on actually, you know, that how I see it on the Sunday call where we put worldly issues, global issues, and also personal issues into the love light, and I have seen tremendous results from this. And if we can gather with more and more people, hundreds, thousands, maybe millions, then we create something very significant, make this world a better place. I welcome the caller here on the conference line. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
John from Las Vegas.
Hello, John. Welcome to the call.
Hi.
Good evening. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location. If you want to, we welcome you, and you can stay in the background. Good evening. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Happy Monday. This is Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to the call, sister. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for being here.
The weeks are just flying by this year.
Yes. you're making lots of noise.
Oops. I just, I'll mute myself.
Okay. Thank you, John. All right. Train your mind to see the good thing. Happy Monday. Good evening. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Good evening, guys. It's Cleo from Connecticut.
Welcome, Cleo. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
All right. You sound a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, I got a stuffed nose, but otherwise I'm all right.
All right, all right. I'm still also recovering. I had also a sore throat and sneezing, things like that, but no biggie.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
All right. And again, I welcome all those that are here listening through BBS Radio. Thank you for joining in tonight. And I welcome those who are listening to the replay of this. Thank you for listening. And we are at the clock of 6. No helicopter in sight yet. Ding, ding, two people joining in. Thank you for being here. Please see your name and location.
from California.
Who is this from California?
Catherine.
Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the call.
Hi, thank you.
All right. And somebody else came in with you. I welcome that person. If you want to, please say a name and location. However, we welcome you and we thank you for being here. All right. And I want to say again that, oh, there's a helicopter. Wind will be here shortly. I want to say again that we have a call, a gathering, conference call, simulcast on the Wednesday evenings, same time as the Mondays. But you, if you have questions, we have answers. I welcome the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Yeah, Rick, Iowa City.
Rick, how are you?
Okay.
All right. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Getting better?
A little bit better. It's up back and forth.
All right.
Thank you, though.
All right. Healing love light to you, my friends.
Okay.
Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Helma, Port Townsend, Washington.
Who is this, sorry?
Helma, Port Townsend, Washington.
Helma, welcome to the call.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for being here. Good evening, welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hi, hi, this is Wynn.
Hi, Wynn, welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Good evening, welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Joan, Rhode Island.
Hello, Joan. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
All right. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
You're just so positive, guys.
You got to be. You got to be. And somebody else joined in. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Yes, this is Jimmy out in Medford, New Jersey.
Hi, Jimmy. Welcome to the call.
How are you?
Good.
Hi,
good.
Jimmy.
Hello, Wynn. How you doing?
All right. Let's see. What time is it, Hive? 6:03?
Yep.
We're on the same page?
Yep.
All right.
We are live on BBS Radio, and again, I welcome those who just joined in. Thank you for being here and participating with this call tonight.
All right. Let's get started, because I'm going to do a replay. And,
all right.
Hang on.
This conference is being recorded.
This is September 19th, 2016.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
And I am making it easier on myself and Terry today. And we're going to do a replay. And, you know, those of you that have been tracking our calls for a while are aware of all of the amazing things that have happened on these calls. And it's very nonlinear. No one knows what's coming next, including me. You know, we have a Wednesday call where people are asking questions to the Elohim, and we don't know what they're going to say. And we have had some of the most amazing answers to questions in the history of the human race. But everyone has to decide, that's my perspective, but everyone has to come to that conclusion themselves. Because this is not giving a dogma of something to follow. This is experiential, and it's wisdom. And it's experiential because of the energies on the line, and it's wisdom, from my perspective, from this intelligence that has a huge breadth of experience in observing the evolution of humans and the way things have gone wrong, the way things have gone right, and is able to draw on that. And then we've had regulars on our call, like Carla Ruckert, who was the channeler for the Law of One until she passed, Terry Friedman, who was the alleged reincarnation of Jesus' disciple Matthew, who Jesus came to, according to his beliefs, and asked him to write a new tract on the story of Jesus in present time. And it's like, you don't have to believe that Terry was Matthew to get something out of that tract. And you don't have to give up your power. In fact, even Jesus, according to Terry, didn't want people to give up their power. That's one of the worst flaws of humans, that we want to find something to follow and to give up their power to. So please tell me what to do. Please fix me. Please heal me. Please fix the humans. Don't let this happen. And it's the traditional idea that if something is God, it's going to fix everything. And it doesn't work. The problem is, as we have learned, since we're talking to allegedly one of those intelligences that might have been identified as God, and they're probably more transparent with us than any other time in history, when both sources, either the Ra group or the Elohim group, any other time in history when they have made themselves known in this realm. And that, you know, we've come up with a whole new way of understanding God, understanding Jesus. And Terry Friedman was not necessarily privy to all of our stuff. But whenever I had him on a show, whenever we've done anything related to him, there was this consciousness, there was this vibe, we could call it, that was present, and it's present in his book, which I would identify as the Christ consciousness. And when we've asked questions about the Christ consciousness, there was an indication that that was a energetic formation from the Ra group that was working with Jesus. And you don't have to believe any of this. You just have to feel the energy and let yourself tap into that love and learn to embrace it as a reality in your own life. And when you do, things shift. And that's the value of our work. You don't have to believe what I said. You don't have to have dogma. You don't have to approach it with any fear. You don't have to approach it with the idea that something is going to control you, because it doesn't. And I know some people are very afraid of all of this because it's so huge that they think they're going to have to give up their power and someone's going to tell them what to do. And to my experience, that never happens with our sources or with me or with Terry. I do have to take a certain amount of control to make sure that things, the energies are pure on these lines. There's people that come in sometimes that want to be recognized, and they would distort the purity of it. So I have to be kind of a dictator there in those kinds of decisions. And sometimes I have to err in the area of caution. So if there's any doubt, I have to be like a pit bull. Terry is very sensitive. It's like she picks up things, and I have to kind of protect the space and protect her sensitivity. That's Terry Brown I'm talking about, particularly since we do something unprecedented, and we channel publicly these sources and allow you access to them by asking questions on Wednesdays. And if you haven't taken advantage of that, you're missing a great opportunity. The thing is listen to some of our archives before you ask a question and make sure that you're comfortable with our sources, because you don't have to give up your power, but and they answer things in a very masterful way, so that if you start listening, you'll see they're very rarely is there any thing where they tell somebody to do something. They give you opportunity to see a situation from a higher point of view. So with that, I am going to be playing today a session we did on one of these Monday calls last year on May, let me see the days here. It was August 24th, just, you know, a little over a year ago. And Terry passed this year, May 4th of this year. And we did a lot of sessions with Terry. A lot of people have been really touched by his work. Carolyn has been doing discussion groups live in Uganda and reading his book. And Dimitri does discussion groups live in the United States, actually anywhere in the world, over a conference line on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific. So this work has really touched people.
Other days or not, Dimitri?
What's that?
You say Tuesdays. Saturdays for Dimitri.
Thank you, Saturdays. Thank you, Mr. Producer, catching me. All right. I thought I was doing good so far, and thank you. But, okay, Saturday is at 2 p.m. Pacific. And it's amazing the way this book has touched people. And it's not like the Bible, and it's not religious. It's more like a... a real observation story of what it was like to be with Jesus when Jesus walked the planet, okay? And you can get the excerpts from it, not the excerpts, you can get the download of the book, the PDF, for a $12 suggested donation and a $5 minimum donation. And even if you're skeptical and you don't want to spend the money, spend the $5. If anyone's disappointed, we'll give you your money back. And in this realm, we all need every opening to love we can find. And this is an opening to love. This is an opening to the Christ consciousness. And it just adds to our tools that we offer on these calls to help you love yourself and empower yourself and make a real connection, real energetic connection with these group souls who are there at your disposal. They're there to help you. They don't have any other reason to exist. They don't have any hidden agendas, at least as far as I can find. So let's start on this right now. And how long is this call? I hope it doesn't go over. I might, like, if I'm bullshitting in the beginning of it, I might, 55 minutes, I believe. And so 55 minutes, we'll take it over. So I might fast forward it a little bit to get to the point where it ends at the right time.
All right. The lines are still open. Thank you all for being here. It is Monday, the August the 24th, 2015.
Will always be where your treasure is. Now, Terry, that was actually you quoting Jesus, right? Those quotes, or were they from Matthew and John?
Absolutely. Said to me, you're just quoting me, and you're nothing but a scribe. I said, that's all right. I love to be a scribe.
Uh-huh. So you were writing all those things down, and then you put them in the Gospel of Matthew. You know what? I tell people, we're not going to believe that Terry was Matthew. We don't believe anything. We don't believe anything. We look for resonance. So we're going to find out tonight his story of how he feels connected to Matthew. And if he was, he was responsible for bringing forth some of Jesus' greatest messages in the Gospel of Matthew. Am I right, Terry?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, as I was reading the book, I found out that you were a tax collector. And
that's correct.
And Jesus discovered you and said, give up everything and come with me. And you did it. Or Matthew did it. And is that in the Bible that Matthew was a tax collector?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
Why don't we start out by having you share, like, how you made this connection to Matthew.
Sure, why not? I was a practicing physician for the last 30 years. I was a medical doctor located in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I must say my life has been very, very unique in that I've had many unique experiences and I've got an opportunity to go to many, many countries and do a lot of traveling as well. So I've had a very rare chance to be, I'd say, educated, just as Yeshua. I call him Yeshua because we all spoke Aramaic at that time. We did not speak Hebrew or any other language. We basically spoke a tongue that is almost unknown now. It's called Aramaic. And having done this, I decided that being an author is much more fun than practicing medicine all day long. So when I received a calling from him in 1995, he appeared to me and asked me if I would write a book about the true life that he expressed 2,000 years ago. Now, I've always been a Christian, and in fact, I'm an elder in the church, and Presbyterian, as a matter of fact, I felt very connected to him, but still, I had no knowledge how deep this connection went. But when he appeared to me in 1995 and asked me to write a book about his life, I said, well, I'm very honored and humble about your request. However, I must say I don't know anything about your life except what I've read in the New Testament. He promptly said, you will remember. He said, on top of that, I will download while you sleep my whole life before your eyes, and you're asked by me to please write this down. I said, well, then I'm just a scribe. He said, that's correct. He said, that's a big job. I said, I agree. I shall take on the task. But at that time, I still had a medical practice in Scottsdale, Arizona, so things went very slow. So after I retired in 97...
Excuse me, Kelly, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
And that is, when you had this vision of Jesus...
Yeah.
Can you share, like, was it a voice in your head? Did you see? Do you have a vision of seeing him? How were you sure that it was actually Jesus, if
well,
you were?
You know, even though I'm analytical in my daily life, I still let my heart lead me. And I knew immediately. Nobody had to tell me. I knew I had a feeling. I heard him. He was talking to me just like you're talking to me now when he's talking to me quite loudly. And this hasn't been the first time either. I've had that when I went to Egypt in 92. However, he spoke to me very clearly and distinctly and said, you will remember. You will remember. And I had not the time at that time to complete the book. So it took me 7 years to write this book about his life. And he, during that time, I spoke to him frequently. He would call me Matai. I said, where does that come from? He said, that's the Aramaic name of Matthew. So he felt, constantly said to me, you were Matai, period. I said, yeah, I might have been asked, but I don't think I was really him. Yes, you were him. So I accepted his words and wrote this book about, from my perspective, as Matai. And as I said, the sixth disciple, and I remembered meeting him when five disciples came to a small town by Nazareth. They came into the roadway there, and I immediately caught my attention. So I began to get close to him and learn more about him. But I indeed was a tax collector. And I was very much had a Roman heart. I liked the way the Romans lived. They had a very, very well-educated and a very, you might say, view of a lot of countries. They would conquer the countries and then bring back much of the culture that they had learned from those countries. So I kind of put myself on their side and spent a lot of my time in Rome. However, once he asked me to join him, my whole life changed. So the book got really going when I retired in 1997 from my medical practice. I could devote to full time by creating this book. I must say that a big part of that was having purchased a beautiful cottage in the city up there in northern city of Colorado, where I moved after I retired. And there, by the creek, I had my days cut out for me. During the night, the information was downloaded to me. In the morning, I would get up and write for hours and then walk in the national forest up there. It's the beautiful mountains, Colorado.
What city in Colorado?
That was in the city of, oh, God, I'm losing my thought now. Sorry. I'll tell you in a minute. Anyway.
But don't worry about it. It's not important.
Estes Park. It's called Estes
Park.
Okay. Park, P-A-R-K. It's a resort city up there. And we bought a wonderful house there along the river near downtown Estes Park. And I used to spend weeks on end up there, essentially by myself, creating this book.
Now, when you got the downloads from Jesus, did it wake up memories in you? Like, did you say, yes, I know that?
Little by little it did.
Mm-hmm.
But the major thing that woke up my memories was actually writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
The first chapter is devoted to my first meeting of Yeshua.
Mm-hmm.
Five motley crew. And, of course, I consider myself more sophisticated and worldly, having spent most of my time in Rome, but coming back to his town of Nazareth and collecting taxes and so forth. But I was very much aligned with the Roman concepts, the Roman ideas, and considered myself one of the better educated of the disciples.
Now, Jesus did this with all his disciples. He would just walk up to them and said, you're supposed to come with me, right? And then they just went along, right?
Well, some did, some was hesitant at first, but eventually joined the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't spontaneous for everyone. I think it was one of my brothers, Thomas, who said something like, well, I've got to go bury my parents or whatever it was. And Yahshua said something to the effect, let the dead bury the dead. Come with me now.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that was striking when I started thumbing through your book, and by the way, it's called The Man Who Walked with Jesus. Is it available on Amazon, Terry?
Yes, it is. It is available on Amazon. It's also available in my website, which is Dr. Friedman, EssentialOils.com. Now, my last name is spelled FRIEDMANN, two N's in that, but that's it. Dr. Friedman, EssentialOils.com.
Okay.
Please go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble has some of my books, but not all of them. But that one I know is in Amazon, and you can get it on my website.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed to me as I was thumbing through your book that Jesus kind of liked the party.
I just wanted to make the comment that the book is not available on Amazon right now. It's not in print, but it will be soon. This is Wynn interjecting, and we'll go on.
He did. Right? He's a very lighthearted guy. He performed yoga every day, loved yoga, and he ate very, very smartly and very healthily and tried to get us to join him. And, of course, we were on the road a lot with him, so we basically ate what he ate.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very light-hearted man and a very human man, I must say.
Mm-hmm. And you were there when he turned water into wine, right?
I hadn't joined yet. No, I didn't see that part.
You didn't see
that. But he was dancing pretty wildly there, and then at the wedding party, and then the master who was putting on the wedding party actually said, we're running low on land, on wine. We've got many more guests than we participated. And actually, it was his mother Mary that asked him, please, son, turn this water into wine. So he did. It was the top quality wine, too. I'm not necessarily a wine connoisseur, but I do like wine, and I think that my understanding is it was good grade of wine.
He didn't. When I was reading your book, it sounds like he didn't do it to show off or to do a miracle. It's because they needed wine, right?
In fact, he was reluctant to reveal himself.
Yeah.
It was
his
mother that pushed him.
Mm-hmm. How about, were you there for any of the other miracles that happened?
Almost everyone after that. That was on the very early time of his life on this earth. But for the rest of the time, I was pretty much involved.
Mm-hmm. What is it, do you think, that Jesus, about Jesus that no one knows about, that you have some memory of, that would be neat for people to hear?
I think you hit it on the nail there, that he was really a guy who loved life, who played tricks on dear mother, and he was a little bit of a... And by the way, he never liked carpentry, never got involved in carpentry. It's mentioned in the Bible, mentioned somewhere, and it's believed by many Christians that he was a real carpenter. He never liked carpentry. He just didn't feel drawn to it. He thought his work was higher than that, in the sense of spiritually message he had to bring to the world. So it was his brother John who worked with his father in the carpenter shop. The other thing was, Jesus was not poor. His great uncle was Joseph Arimathea. And Joseph Arimathea was a wealthy, wealthy trader who sailed his ships around the ocean and to India, to England, Scotland, in fact, to the United States, and traded with all types of people, and he got to know a lot of these countries quite well. In fact, the big thing was when Jesus reached 12 years of age, he went with his uncle, Joseph Arimathea, and became a deckhand and learned to be a man and a sailor all at once, but learned along the line about people throughout the world that was known at that time, which included, as they say, India. He learned many things from going to India, as well as going to Tintagel in northern England, going to visit the native Indians in Mexico at that time. So a lot of these things he had found out from the wonderful education that could only be given to him by his wealthy uncle. So he wasn't poor by any means, but he left a very, was in a very humble life and never was much for luxuries.
And, you know, when Jesus and his disciples were tromping around, was Joseph of Arimathea footing the bills? Or were, you know, like they obviously had to eat and sleep somewhere. Were people taking care of them, or were they staying in the motels of the time?
No, a lot of times we slept out under a tree outside. And don't forget, this part of Israel was very good climate. We occasionally saw snow, but that was pretty rare. It was only at the higher altitudes. But mostly people were very kindly and accepted us and took us in and fed us and things like that. If not, we did with what we had. Dried fish. We were around the Sea of Galilee for quite a long time, which we were able to get abundant fish from that area.
You know, I should see if Terry, you know, the work that we're doing has a connection to Jesus. And part of the connection is that we believe, I mean, there's a huge amount of evidence to this. I don't know if you looked at it, but that Terry was... Are you familiar with St. Catherine of Siena?
I heard of her, yes. I'm not that familiar with it, but I have heard of her, yes. Absolutely.
Here's the story. St. Catherine was a young woman in Siena, Italy, and she would go into the local church and they would write down everything she said because they thought God was speaking to them through her.
Yeah.
And apparently she was talking to Jesus because Jesus said, "You're now my..." Maybe, Terry, you want to share that part? Hello, Terry, are you on mute?
Let's see. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. Well, I remember, this is what I remember. I remember the feeling of being married and having the feeling of a wedding ring, and that I was married to Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And that's where I made my commitments, rather than in a worldly marriage. I thought that I was married to Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. I have other memories of that life, too. And the thing with memories, as you have mentioned, like as you wrote the book, you remembered more and more. The thing that I found is that I remember more and more as time goes by.
Yes. Not only that, before I published this book in 2002, I decided to go on a trip to Israel and see for myself the places that we had visited and see what it's like today. And I did do that, and that brought things to a real foundation or meaning to me, because I saw things as they are today, and then I remembered more things of how they were before when I actually saw Peter's house and so on and so forth, which is said to still be standing. So when I saw those things and sailed on the Sea of Galilee, it opened up a lot to me, and my memory came back a lot quicker at that time. So right before I finished the book, I did include that as the final chapter. So that really made a big difference to bring everything to me at that time. Meeting some herdsmen who spoke, who lived in the spoke Aramaic and lived in the tents of skins of animals, and went around the villages, went throughout the country feeding their animals. This also helped me gain a lot of knowledge about the language and much of my work at that time, or play, if you want to look at Jesus. We were more serious than he was, I think. He had his hands full teaching these 12 dumb guys about life, I think, and what it was all about, because we were certainly going against the grain when we began to discuss these things.
Now, I remember when he brought Judas on, you weren't too pleased with Judas, were you?
No, he's kind of an outsider, because most of us were from around northern Israel. We were from, you know, from the cities there, Nazareth or whatever. But Judas was brought in from Jerusalem. And he had a different agenda. God love him, he had one of the toughest jobs there. I say that because his idea was, hey, we can challenge Jesus here publicly, and he'll stand up and break through the bars of the prison and show that he is stronger than anything. Well, we can chase the Romans out of our country. We're now occupying the state of Israel. So this was his belief. And he was very defined on that belief that was the way things were. But he was only one of the 12 of us. And we all had slightly different perspective on things. As I said myself, I was kind of aligned with the Roman Empire. So that didn't interest me at all, what his ideas were.
I've heard this story before about Judas, because normally it's
historically, he's thought of as the guy that betrayed Jesus for silver. But in fact, I've heard two other stories. One was that he wanted to put Jesus on the line so Jesus would stand up and the whole world would recognize him, which is what you're saying. And the other was that Jesus, in fact, wanted this to happen because it was a way that he would reach people, you know?
Yeah. Well, that is unique about him, that he was crucified, ascended, and quite different than the other. Because, you know, death by the cross was quite common in that day. It wasn't just the three people on the hill overlooking Jerusalem. A lot of people were crucified. If they try to challenge the conquerors, the Romans, they were put to death in a very painful way, hung on the cross. So being on the cross is not particularly fun, but it certainly wasn't uncommon. And Jesus kept telling me today, he said, whatever you do, take me down from that cross. I don't want to be up there. I don't want to be known as the guy on the cross. I want to be known for the message I brought to the world, which says we are all one. We are all children of God. And that's the important thing. Not the message that he was he died on the cross to save our sins. He didn't know. I didn't say save your sins. I'm not your sin saver. I'm your servant. He told me that many times. I am your servant. I'm not here to save you from yourself or the things you do. You have to deal with that. I'm here as your servant to help you see things more clearly.
Well,
that's beautiful. Hey,
you, are you coming up with any questions? Well, you were there after he was on the cross, and
yeah.
Then you were there after he appeared resurrected. Am I right?
That's correct. And it took him about 6 days. 5 to 6 days to ascend completely. He was put in the tomb of his great uncle Joseph of Arimathea had saved that tomb, and he was placed in there. And then, obviously, he came down out of that tomb. He had the shroud still around him. The Shroud of Turin is the factual shroud that he wore, and eventually that truth will be brought out. Right now, there's some controversy of the people that have control of that shroud. And by the way, there's two pieces. There's the facial shroud, and then there's the body shroud. So he basically claimed to me, that is my correct shroud, and you'll find, when your analysis gets improved, you'll find evidence of the frankincense oil still on that shroud that he was prepared at death with by the Marys. Mother Mary and his twin flame, Mary Magdalene. Or Mary Magdalena.
You know, I'm just going to tell everybody, if you're not aware of it, the Shroud of Turin actually exists right now, and that there's a image on it of Jesus that's kind of burned into the shroud, and this controversy about, this is what Terry was talking about, whether that's actually Jesus or somebody faked it or something like that. But you can look it up, Shroud of Turin, and read about it. And Terry, who were your favorite disciples? Who were your friends?
Oh, golly.
Or Matthew's friends.
Yeah, Matthew. Oh. Well, actually, surprising enough, I did manage to make friends with Judas. One thing about him, he was a little anti-Roman, but I learned that he was very educated, one of the most educated of myself, and I did like him quite a bit. Thomas was a good friend of mine, and still is.
You know him this lifetime?
Yeah, but he came in a female body this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good friend of mine then. And as groups, we stuck together, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Which often happens. We kind of
together. How about John the Beloved?
Honestly, because he was homosexual, we didn't like his feminine ways. In fact, on the painting of the Last Supper, he's sitting next to Yeshua. He looks very feminine. He was very feminine, but he's really a good guy. And Mary was introduced to him by Jesus when he was on the cross, saying, "Mother, behold your son. Son, behold your mother." He knew that he could trust John. So what he did, he took, when things got tough after his crucifixion, he took her to Turkey and went to the city of Ephesus in Turkey and got a place for her on the mountaintop overlooking Ephesus. Ephesus used to be a Roman city in Turkey at seacoast that was eventually silted in and is abandoned now today. But they're finding lots of interesting things in their library there, and they've only about 3-5% uncovered by archaeological digs, but it's a very marvelous finding of this lifetime when a lot of people respected Ephesus. But he put her in a mountaintop retreat above Ephesus, looking down over Ephesus, if she could go down when she needed supplies. And that's where she was the last 8 years of her life.
So John the Beloved was gay. But that's not in the Bible, is it?
No, none of us put him there. But he did not, I will say this, he did not practice. He did not practice this. He was...
Mm-hmm.
He was committed to Yeshua's, his needing to get the word out, the message out through the healing. When we went around the country doing our healing, doing our work in the villages, where we were generally well received by the people at that time. But we also had, at times, a very large entourage with us of people who were looking after us and making sure we had everything right and everything was cooked properly and just the way that Yeshua liked it. And the times we did not spend in the house at night, we had the company of all these wonderful people who followed us wherever we went.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a story that years ago, I had a teacher that I was very influenced by. I would say he was the best. One period of my life, I was going to yogis and masters and gurus and reading everything. And this one guy was awesome. He would give a talk, and I could feel the energy land in the room. And I could feel my depressions going away. I could feel there was something in his presence. And I think I had that experience with him. And
in recent times, I show up and do things, and people feel similar energy as I felt around this guy.
Yeah.
And he was like a role model. And he used to say that he was John the Beloved, okay? And I used to think maybe he was because of his ability to bring in this wonderful energy into the space.
Yeah.
And probably about 12 years into his work, 12 or 15, I don't remember, he got into deep doo-doo because it came out that he was having relationships with the four guys that were his assistants.
Well,
and they all got mad at him.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting that you said John the Beloved was gay. It was really interesting because I don't think anyone really... Well, there are people, if you look at the Internet, there's people that mention it. And then some people say they thought that Jesus was having a connection with John the Beloved. But nonetheless, that this guy was awesome in his ability to transmute spirit and bring it into the room. I don't want to say who he is because I don't want to... His work got very damaged because of this gay thing that came out. And a lot of people left him because of it. But it's very interesting that you mentioned that.
Well, we kind of made fun of John because he was kind of naive and, you know, but he would do anything he could to help Jesus in his work, so forth. So there was nothing he wouldn't do. So he was really very faithful.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have about 10 minutes left. We could go to 12 minutes. And there's two things I want to do in the next 12 minutes. First off, I want to make sure that we fit in, and thank you, Carolyn in Alaska, for reminding me. We didn't even do it Sunday because I wasn't even paying attention to the news, but do a prayer or an intention for the Philippines, for the 10,000 people supposedly died there, and I'm sure a lot of people are homeless at the moment. So we want to do a prayer for them. And, Terry, I hope you'll join us for that. But before we do that, let's just see if anyone's got a burning question for you. And I'll open the lines. Let's see how much noise we got here. Hang on.
I got a question.
Who is that? Is that Donald Herman?
Yep, it is. I was just curious about, you were talking about Jesus' traveling, and you said he went to South America. Do you know, would he have met Mayans, or do you have any idea who he might have met with there?
No, it wasn't South America. It was more like Mexico. Mexico is considered North America, by the way. And yes, he met a lot of the Mayans and this group, and they were still doing sacrifices, even though Yeshua and Joseph really enjoyed the wonderful tropical breezes. I think when they were sitting on the beach, they tried to influence the heads of the Mayan group or the Aztec group. I think it was before the Aztec came about, was that the Aztec were a breakoff for the Mayans. They tried to tell them that God doesn't expect or doesn't even want, doesn't care for any of the sacrifice. That's wrong. Whether it be animal or man, it's wrong. Let's stop doing that. That was the message that Yeshua and Joseph Arimathea gave to these elders of the Mayan population, who was at that time in southern Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's see if we got another question. Anyone else? Okay, we've come to the end of our time for BBS, and I'm going to continue to let the audio finish out. It's got 9 minutes more, and so the whole talk will be on the replays. And so if you're on BBS, I don't know, they might let it run for a little more, but they have another show to do. It's 7. So if you're intrigued at what happens next, then listen to the replay. And we invite you to download the book, The Man Who Walked with Jesus. And you can hear Terry's authenticity. And if that touched you, then this is a phenomenal book that is in our group. You know, we have about 500 copies that went out, and it was people really, really responded to it. And it's a way to integrate Jesus, probably in a more personal way than has ever been presented on the planet. So.